Welcome back to another edition of the Pennsylvania Prisons and Parole Podcast. I'm your host, Ryan Tarkowski. Today, we'll check in with two of our more unique facilities in Pennsylvania, one of our most rural facilities and one of our most urban. A little later in the show, we'll be joined by Superintendent Gina Clark from SEI Chester, who will tell us about how her facility's location in the heart of the city influences its operations. We'll also learn about a couple of first-of-their-kind units that are gaining national attention. But first, we head to Clearfield County and a visit with Major Scott Carter from the Kuhana Boot Camp, the only facility in the DOC system without a single fence.
My name's Major Carter. I've Major the Guard at the boot camp here for the past 4.5 years. I've worked at the boot camp for approximately 23 and a half years of my correctional career. I currently supervise security operations, the medical department, maintenance operations, and the culinary department within the facility. And everything that goes, the ancillary duties that go with each of those departments, unit management, case management, those things that go within, that kind of fit in between the gaps of those major departments.
All right. And so we're going facility by facility throughout this year, kind of talking about what makes each facility special. And I guess everything about the Kuhana Boot Camp is special because you're unlike any other facility in our system.
Yes, we are definitely unlike any traditional correctional facility, what somebody might associate with, the Department of Corrections with fences and buildings and structures and things like that. But outside of our physical plant being very different, because we don't have a fence, and our housing units are typically all dormitory style housing units with common area bathrooms, common area showers, those kinds of things. Everything is a shared resource within the housing units. Outside of that, we are non-typical because our entire facility is really, really focused and based around the JRI-2 legislation and the program tracks that involve that.
So JRI-2, tell folks that might not be familiar what that is.
So JRI-2 is the Justice Reinvestment Initiative. It's a second version of this legislation. And what that did is it took some things that the department had and that the courts had, and it kind of, I guess in layman's terms, it lumped it into something that the department could use to get inmates into program and treatment and tracks faster, to get them back out into the community faster. And the savings and the reinvestment part of that comes from the monetary savings of just housing inmates in traditional correctional facilities. Along the same lines of our non-traditional status here as the boot camp, we are the only co-ed correctional facility that the PA Department of Corrections has as well. So it's funny you say, man, we have men and women that are actually housed here and they're involved in these tracks.
Now, you mentioned this aligns with their sentencing. Is this something that folks that might be at another facility can apply to, or is this like the beginning, you're going to the boot camp when you're sentenced?
So that's no longer, that used to be the case when the boot camp program first started. It was all judge sentenced, judge recommended. The JRI-2 legislation, once again, kind of took that out of part of the legal process for the inmate and put it into the department's hands. If there's a major issue at the initial step when the inmate is getting sentenced and things like that with the public defenders and the Office of Victim Advocacy and the judges, they can always say, we don't want this person to, go in one of those tracks. We want them to serve their time and pay their debt to society in a certain way. If the judges and the DAs and OVA and things, object to the inmate participating, as soon as they come into the department, every inmate is automatically vetted for one of these programs. Now, obviously there's certain requisites and prerequisites that, are required to be in one of these tracks. You mentioned earlier about nonviolent, there's things where certain inmates and certain offenses would not qualify or would be automatically disqualifiers from coming to the boot camp, like inmates with escapes and things like that are very heinous and very violent crimes. Most of our inmates are very short sentenced inmates. They are inmates that are, people say nonviolent. I don't like to use that term, but they're inmates that are generally convicted of drug and alcohol offenses. Along those lines, because we get them in drug and alcohol programming to get them back out into the community, and they're inpatient in the community part of the supervision as far as their treatment.
So when I think of the term boot camp, I think of the military, and I think of running and doing push-ups and climbing rope ladders, that sort of thing. Is that what goes on at your boot camp?
Well, there's absolutely a component to that. We have inmates in those programs, in the boot camp program. And when you think of boot camp, I know we all watch movies and things like that. You think of those, you think of the military component of what boot camp is. And we definitely have that. We definitely have inmates doing push-ups and sit-ups and running and marching and the military regimented part of what you'd consider boot camp. But along those lines, what people don't know is one of the reasons why the boot camp program within the Pennsylvania Department of Corrections has been so successful is because of the approach that we take to actual, I guess what would been initially called shock incarceration from the 90s. That's typically what you consider boot camp. You know, the boot camp program in and of itself, instead of it just being that shock and military and part of the incarceration, the initial founders of the program really made it a holistic program. So instead of it just being a military component and the push-ups and the PT and the physical and the military regimented drill instructor part, it's really kind of a tripod of sorts with, you know, the work education component, the treatment component for their addictions, and then the military component as far as discipline. You know, we believe if you take a holistic approach to that, you know, inmates need to learn how to work and get their education. They need to get their treatment, and they also need to have that self-discipline in their daily lives to be able to accomplish those things. And you kind of can't have treatment without discipline. You kind of can't discipline in and of itself isn't a good thing without some education and work. So it's really a holistic approach to the boot camp. And the last part of that, what really makes boot camp work is what we call one of our main goals and philosophies is a role model concept. You know, early on in the 90s, when these programs were starting, you know, they would be considered abusive by any stretch of the term by the general public. But what you see here at the Quahana boot camp, if you see an inmate which we call them teammates here, we don't call them inmates, we call them teammates because they're part of a team, a unit team. If you see them marching, you see a staff member marching. If you see a teammate doing a push-up, you see a staff member doing a push-up. So one of the key points that really limits the abusive nature that some of these other states had is that our staff members, you know, they really embody the role model concept, and they're in the groups, they're in the TCs, they're in the boot camp, they're doing the push-ups, they're doing the marching, they're doing the meetings, they're doing these things right along with the inmates that are living in their housing unit.
How many teammates do you have at the boot camp at any one time? Is it more of a lower staff to inmate ratio?
So the boot camp program in recent years, you know, our population average is about 450 per day. We will transition in and out anywhere from 800 to 1200 inmates through our facility in a single year, just because everybody's short. You know, they're here for a short amount of time to get their program. So we average about 450 inmates a day. Prior to COVID, we probably averaged 300 boot camp inmates and 150 therapeutic community inmates. However, December of 2019, the JRI2 legislation was signed into law, and we've seen a transition with the demographic of our population, the composition of our population. We started transitioning just by the nature of how it was, a little bit away from boot camp. You saw more because now they had an option. The judge wasn't sentencing them. I guess this makes more sense if I explain it. Prior to the JRI2, the judges would have to sentence people to a state drug treatment program or into boot camp. Since JRI2, the department kind of guides where inmates go, and they have more of a say in what they're and what track they're going to go to. So there's an
option. As you mentioned earlier, part of that classification process.
Absolutely. So there's a little bit of an option there. I will tell you that just the nature of the state drug treatment program and how it's structured, it's very appealing to inmates to go that route. They will do 7 months in a traditional correctional facility doing the therapeutic community part of the programming. From there, they go to their next phase, which is an inpatient for 60, 90 days in a CCC center or an inpatient center. And then they do an outpatient, a community supervision part of that. And after 2 years, essentially, there's no standardized supervision through parole. Once they're done with that part of the program, it's a two-year program, they're done. Their sentence is done. They don't have a parole after that. There's no supervision after that. They're done. Whereas boot camp, you know, hypothetically, if a person had a 2 to 5 year sentence, they could come to boot camp within 18 months of their minimum. They would get out of prison probably a year before their minimum, but they would have that complete supervision time afterward to deal with. And obviously that's not as appealing as going through a drug treatment program and not having the supervision after you completed it. We still do have inmates in boot camp. You know, right now we have probably about, out of our 430 inmates today, we probably have 60 inmates that are in the boot camp program. And the boot camp is still a voluntary program. They don't get sentenced to that. It's voluntary. But, you know, our population sort of stayed the same. It just the composition changed a little bit. That's all.
What's a typical day like at the boot camp?
Okay, so for boot camp inmates, a typical day for them would be at 5:15 in the morning. Everybody's out of bed, military style. They play reveille. You know, they get everybody out of bed and, you know, they get in what we call a head and hygiene call. They get in, go to the bathroom in a very structured manner. Everything you do has a procedure, from utilizing the bathroom to, taking showers, those kinds of things. But they'll get up, they'll do a count, and they will, the procedure, they'll go and they'll make their head, what we call a head and hygiene call, which is brushing your teeth, going to the bathroom, getting ready for the morning. They'll get in their PT gear, which is sweatpants, sweatshirts, sweatshorts, and they'll go back to their room or bunk area, and they'll make their beds, and they'll get everything ready to go. And it usually takes less than a half an hour to get 50 teammates from out of their bed at 5:15 in the morning to brush their teeth, use the bathroom, wash their hands and face, get dressed, and make their beds. So the housing officers do a really good job of that. Obviously, when you're dealing with a lot of people and you're moving them in and out of areas, you need to do it orderly. And that's why we have these procedures in place. But it's very structured. And then they go do and they have what they call housing unit PT. They do physical training in the morning, push-ups, sit-ups, calisthenics, those kinds of things. And obviously, the newer you are in the program, the harder those things are. You know,
that's what I was gonna ask you. I don't want to interrupt, but a lot of these folks that are coming to us may not have had that kind of structure in their lives before.
Absolutely.
What's the initial reaction typically? Is there a typical initial reaction, or is everybody different?
Usually, I think when people first get here, you know, when you talk to them after they're graduating, or, you know, when they're getting close to graduating, you know, what'd you think? And you're going to get anything from, I thought it was going to be like the Marine Corps style Quonset Hut barracks. You know, I thought it was going to be like SCI that I was at before with the big tall fence. And you kind of run a gamut, but most of them say at the end, I thought it would be harder, right? I thought it would be more yelling and more drill instructor, more, you know, like the quintessential, Clint Eastwood on the movies, you know, guy. And what they said was they'll tell you when I first got here, the whole making your bed thing and getting up and asking somebody to brush your teeth or asking somebody to sharpen a pencil, you know, asking for permission to do all these things, you know, that was really, really difficult because my life was, I just got up and did what I want and, you know, went and sold drugs or went to get something to eat. And anytime I felt like it, now I had this other person telling me that it's not okay to sharpen my pencil right now or when I can get on the phone or those kinds of things. And so initially, you know, they're deer in the headlights and it's just not unlike you or I, if we were going through something, you know, new like this. And some of them are difficult. It can be very difficult for them to kind of endure that structure part of it. Not so much the yelling, not so much the giving the orders, but the structure part of having to get up and make your bed, those kinds of things, telling you when you can go to bed. You know, you're not allowed to sleep during the day, and those are the things that are strictly regimented by the housing staff, the treatment staff, the unit team. But they it doesn't take them long. I will tell you that the initial 2 weeks that, you know, when they're here, they can do nothing right. You know, there's a process there for kind of, I guess you would say, you know, layman's terms, is sort of tearing them down, tearing away the institutionalized nature of things, you know, making a cheat sheet whenever I want, you know, getting up and doing things whenever I want, going to yard, laying around, you know, it's kind of tearing those things out of them, that lifestyle, that mentality. and helping them understand that, you know, the one or 50 guys that they're in that platoon with, that they're, those are their teammates, that everything they do affects the guy standing beside them. And how they translate that is that, because everything you do when you're walking around the street or you're at your job, that affects your family. Like, the decisions you make don't affect you. The decisions you make affect your family. They affect your kids. And that's a point we really drive home here in this program, that the decisions you make, they're going to affect the person standing next to you and across from you. Just like, you know, if you go home and you drink and drive and you get a DUI, that's going to affect your family. That's going to affect your children. That's going to affect your job. And it's a point that's really driven home, and they learn that very, very fast.
Do the folks who have been in the program for a longer period of time kind of take the newer guys under their wing?
There's not a formal mentorship, because, you know, obviously they're still inmates, and we don't put inmates in charge of other inmates, you know, that we don't want to create an imbalance that way. But the housing unit officers, they will actually pull like senior guys over, what we call our gold phase. You know, they're getting ready to graduate, they're getting ready to go on parole, and they'll use them like in the community meetings, when, especially initially when you have a group of teammates and that's day two or three and they're feeling like, I don't think I can do this. I don't think I can do another push-up. I don't think I can deal with making my bed and the standing around and the structure. You know, when you bring a guy over that's been here for 6 months and you're like, hey, you know, don't take my word for it. You know, talk to teammate Smith or Jones. They'll tell you, and you have a guy standing up there and he comes from the same neighborhoods they come from. And he's like, I didn't think I could do it either. But here I am 6 months and I'm getting ready to go home. I'm going to be on parole. I have a job lined up. You know, you can do it. Don't quit. Don't give up. It gets better. They definitely utilize the senior guys in that capacity. And it's very useful.
That's the voice of Major Scott Carter, Major of the Guard at Quihanna Boot Camp, one of the DOC's most unique facilities. You started talking when we first started our conversation about the unique physical plant of the Quihanna Boot Camp. You said there's no fence there.
No, we do not have a fence here. So all of our inmates are obviously vetted to come here, and that's by the nature of their crime and their length left on their sentence. There's no fence here. You know, when you drive by, it looks like an office building except for the big sign out front that says, you know, the Quihanna Boot Camp and the departmental flags. And that's another unique part. We have a road bisecting our facility. We're a 30-acre compound with 18 buildings, and there's a main state route that runs right through the middle of the place.
The wilderness of Clearfield County kind of serves as your fence. Is there any other way
Absolutely.
That your physical surroundings affect the operations of the boot camp?
Well, it's very dark here at night. You know, it's not like you see the lights, bright lights of the city, but also the wildlife. You know, the wildlife here is very is a big part of what we do every day. You know, there's elk in the yard. You know, we have to shut down things at times to corral the occasional rattlesnake. You know, last week was Employees Week, and there was a staff member and myself. We were down there, and we were serving some staff on 2-to-10 shift, and, you know, we had an inmate helper there with us, and he pointed out the window, and he looked, and there was a coyote actually walking about 50 yards, you know, down through the grass right outside the officer's dining hall, and I looked at the inmate, and he goes, I never seen one of those before. And, you know, the occasional bear will come through here, and, you know,
they don't teach you guys how to deal with that kind of stuff at the DOC Training Academy in Elizabethtown. Is this something that is just the folks that work there? This is your personal lives. You're wilderness people, and you know how to deal with rattlesnakes and bears and coyotes, because I wouldn't know how to do any of that.
Well, the main thing is we just stay away from stuff. We let the wildlife do what they do, and we do what we do. We try not to have a too big of an impact other than we're operating a correctional facility in the middle of the Michiana State Forest in central Pennsylvania. You know, so our house is their house, and their house is our house. But
probably goes back to that respect thing you were talking about. Respect
absolutely.
The wilderness, too. You mentioned when we first started talking 20-plus years at the boot camp. If you were at a dinner party or a holiday party, and you had to come up with your memorable story, which was the one that you like to go to tell people?
Well, you know, there's a couple. You know, I really remember a kid. I'll never forget it. It was early on in my career. His name was Inmate Williams. I still remember. He lived in hotel unit rack number 6. And this this kid was, he was 20 years old. He was 360 pounds. And, you know, obviously he couldn't do push-ups. And I remember his first PT test, he did one push-up, seven sit-ups, and he walked 2 miles in 27 minutes. And I say that not to, you know, make fun of him, but, you know, I brought him to the desk and my dad's at the time, and we're talking to him and we're saying, you know, listen, this is on you. This isn't on me. This isn't on anybody else in this housing. This is on you. Whether you do it or don't do it, that's up to you. You have to make the decision to do it or not do it, you know. And, you know, I really started, like, working with him, not physically but mentally, you know, because he had very low self-esteem. He stood there and he looked at the ground, and it was just one of those situations where you're like, man, this kid just needs – he kind of needs a break, and he needs it for himself. And through
especially,
the
if he's standing there and everybody else is doing everything and he feels like he can't do it, that must have been a tough first week for him.
Right. You know, there it goes without saying that there's definitely a pecking order in state correctional facilities and prisons and inmates and things. And, you know, through the course of – 6 months, you know, maybe 5 months, he went from being the kind of the big kid in the house unit. And we don't, you know, there's no requirement to lose weight and thing. You have to put forth a positive effort here. But he started watching his diet. He started working out, doing things, you know, he didn't have a GED. And through the course of the 6 months, this inmate Williams, he got a GED. We put him out on CWP. He went to remedial PT every night, which was like extra PT training. And in that 6 months, he went from doing one push-up, seven sit-ups, and 27 minutes for 2 miles to his graduation PT test we give them. We give him milestone tests, you know, every month in the program. But his graduation PT test, he did, I think it was 52 push-ups, 68 sit-ups, and he failed the 2 mile run by 4 seconds.
Oh, wow.
And to tell you a little bit about the kid and his self-esteem and where he came from, you know, I looked at him and went, you passed. And he said, sir, no, sir, absolutely not. I did not pass. And I said, yes, you did. I'm passing you. Like, I'm giving you these 4 seconds, buddy. Like, you earned them. You definitely earned it. He's like, no, can I run it again on Wednesday? And we took him out. We made him do the whole PT test again. He passed the push-ups and the sit-ups. And four or five of the other guys in the housing unit volunteered, I will go run with him. And we took them out and we gave them all the PT tests again. And these guys went and they ran the PT test and he passed on his own. A week later on graduation day, his mom walked by him. She didn't recognize him. He had lost 113 pounds while he was here. He had gotten his GED. He stood up tall. He stood up there with his chest lifted and he looked you in the eye. It was very inspiring to see what this young man did. And I say that to tell you this, I did not do one push-up with him. If he did it, he did it on his own. He was going to, if he accomplished anything, it was going to be for himself. And he absolutely did. And to watch his mom cry, and this is over 20 years ago, about, you know, her baby boy, he lost the weight and he was so proud of himself and he got his GED. You know, that's one that really sticks with me.
Thanks again to Major Carter for joining us, and thanks to the team at the boot camp who are making a difference in the lives of so many men and women in Pennsylvania. Now let's head to SCI Chester and welcome in Superintendent Gina Clark.
Chester opened in April of 1998. Last year, we just celebrated our 25-year anniversary. And it's been going strong ever since. We were the first tobacco-free facility in the Commonwealth. We were the 24th. State correctional institution opened up. Yeah, so we're now we're on 26 years, so pretty excited about that.
I think when a lot of people think about our state correctional facilities, they picture the far-flung, more rural areas, you know, Forest County, Cambridge Springs, those kind of places. But Chester is unique because it's right in the middle of the city. Do you know how that came to be?
From what you can hear is that we were supposed to be like a complete dedicated drug and alcohol treatment facility. And I guess the thought was back then is that people would come in here, they have one foot out the door, they're getting their addiction, you know, handled, and then, you know, they can go home into the community. So, yeah, our layout is completely unique. It is a big factor in why we do a lot of the good things that we do here. I have a river behind me. I'm close to the airport. You may hear a train in the background since I'm sitting in my office. You know, and the plane. So it's planes, trains, and automobiles. I'm the only facility that has a bus stop across the street. as well. So yeah, we're very unique. We're right in this smack dab, and you know, Harris is behind me, so we're neighbors.
Are there any other unique challenges or even opportunities that come from your location?
Being in the middle of a city is really what we are, right? So, you know, when things happen in the city, it affects us. If you have, you know, unfortunately a shooting or a fire or, you know, a flood or a power outage or, you know, things like that, that affects, like, you know, this county and, you know, obviously Philadelphia County, you know, we feel it too, and we have to adapt to those types of emergencies and you know, kind of build those relationships with first responders in Delaware County and Philadelphia County and in the city of Chester. So we're constantly monitoring what happens, especially in Philadelphia and Delaware County and in the city of Chester, definitely.
And you mentioned some of the programs and stuff that go on at SCI Chester. So many interesting and unique programs at your facility. Really kind of tough to where to start, but let's start with SLEP, the Senior Life Enhancement Program. Did I get that right?
Yes. Yep. Yep. So that was started before I was here with the previous administration. It was the brainchild of them, and they thought of the older population that's here. And they kind of hit on a hot topic that is maybe, you know, floating around with politicians today. And that's what do you do with folks that are elderly and that are incarcerated? You know, when I started 20 some years ago, those guys now are 20 years older. So the guys that were, you know, in their 40s and their 50s, they're now in their 60s and 70s. And it's a huge population in the state. And we have 10% of my pop here are lifers. And they thought, like, let's bring awareness in the community of Chester, because that's what we are. And also let's try to bring some enlightenment to, you know, outside and start talking about this topic and use Chester as a forum. So it's not just a bunch of older fellas sitting playing Wii and putting puzzles together. And I sometimes kid around with them about that. They've teamed up with folks from Temple and Widener. And they had meaningful discussions on health. What does it look like, you know, to have cancer and when you're incarcerated, dementia, topics that we deal with in the street and in the community, that we also deal with inside the facility and the department and the institution. So they had a workshop or a forum last year, and I'm looking forward to putting another one on again where we bring folks in from the community, politicians that support us and support the department. Just to bring light to the topic and to the subject so that people can start talking, because when people talk, things happen.
As in general, the population in the DOC is getting older, correct? And what we refer to as a senior citizen, maybe 65 plus on the outside, is not the same as senior when you're talking in a correctional setting, right?
Right. I think their age is 50, which, you know, I'm a little bit shy of 50, so I kind of chuckle when they say that, but I get it. To me, it's the more the merrier. If you can, you know, do good and talk about a good topic and bring light to something that's important, you know, why not?
And does it give the older population on this unit maybe more of a chance to kind of get out of that day-to-day prison life that they may have outgrown a little bit?
Yeah. So what's kind of interesting, which I never really thought about, is sometimes when, as the folks get older, they kind of isolate themselves. They almost become like cell dwellers, especially as they age, maybe because, you know, they don't fit in with the younger crowd anymore. The younger crowd sometimes aren't always doing the positive things that we need them to do while they're on the housing unit. So they kind of isolate themselves, and the guys that are in the senior center, they reach out to them, they bring them out, it gives them a place to go, to talk, to hang out, to, you know, kind of just get away from that crazy hustle and bustle that the younger guys and that energy that they, you know, might pursue. But then I also use that to our advantage, because I go up there regularly and I say to them, you know, what about grabbing some of these young guys that might not be on the right path and mentoring them and say, hey, listen, you know, you can change. There's an opportunity to change. So they actually act as mentors too, which I really appreciate. And I like to foster that with them.
We're chatting with Gina Clark, the superintendent at SEI Chester. Superintendent, you mentioned kind of a throwaway line that you've been doing this for 20 plus years now.
Yeah.
What keeps you coming back?
Listen, I started my career at Graterford as a CO1, and it was only supposed to be for, a trial, just until I get a better job. Right. Corrections is a blessing to me and is very fulfilling. And I absolutely love it. I love every aspect of my career. I love that I'm here now. I love being at Graterford. I love being a part of the team that closed Graterford and opened up Phoenix. I love what Phoenix taught me. And I'm excited for this phase of my career and my life where I'm planted here at Chester. I love my staff here. They're amazing. They're awesome. And, we're very unique. As you can see, it's Dress Down Friday. We're all about staff wellness and trying to relate to each other and not be so uptight all the time. But yeah, I'm blessed that this career has given me so much. And I really appreciate the work that my staff do here. And, they keep me going and motivated, and they do good work to produce productive citizens when they go home, because that's the goal, right? I mean, the goal is to make people better than what they were when they came in. And that's what we try to do.
You mentioned a couple of times talking to the incarcerated population, and you just kind of toss it out there that, I talk to them about mentoring, or I talk to them about their daily life. I think a lot of folks might get the idea that a superintendent may just be sitting in an office all day long, but you mentioned a couple times being out and about among your staff and among the population.
Yeah, I do. I try to do at least quarterly, I don't like the word town hall, but I guess that's what it is. I get everybody in the gym staff wise, on both shifts. And we'll do it like a couple days during the week, myself and the executive staff here at Chester. And it's kind of just like, this is where we're going. This is where we were the past couple months. If there's an issue that I keep on seeing, I'll address it there. Most of the time, those conversations are pleasant. Sometimes they're not. You have to be stern in corrections at certain times, I guess. And I do the same thing with the inmate population here. I have town halls where I have block representatives come in, and they'll sit with me and the admin staff, and we'll just talk about things like what's going on in the unit. Sometimes during football, I'll go to the RHU on a Sunday after church and I'll make rounds, and the guys are watching the Eagles in the RHU because we have TVs there. I'll check in with them and make rounds. And also, talk about different things while watching football. It's a way to get guys to talk to respond. I also just go and sit on housing units for a couple hours. I'll go sit at a Texas table during day room and people line up just to talk to me. I have to make myself available to the staff and to the inmates here, or you're not going to know what's going on. To me, that's how I keep people safe. You can squash problems by being visible. And that's very important as a facility manager. So I try to stay down to earth.
I remember one of the first times I met you was when I brought a reporter from California to one of your specialized units, Little Scandinavia. Little Scandinavia gets a ton of attention in the media and press. It's a very ambitious project that the DOC started several years ago now, before the pandemic. And I know you're kind of stepping into the facility manager role well into the project. And we don't have a ton of time to get into Little Scandinavia, but what are the things that you want people to know about that unit?
So the units, we're still in the research phase, right? So we're going to see at the end of the year what that happens. It's a partnership with Drexel University, and it's a different way to do housing units in a facility. It's based pretty much off of the Swedish and Norwegian model on how they do corrections. It acts as a community. There's more housing unit officers that are there. The ratio is like a 3-to-1. So they have like a cohort. The officer that's there is kind of a hybrid between a corrections officer and a corrections counselor. That's how I like to see it. It's very progressive. They have their own laundry room there. They have a kitchen. They purchase their own food from the local ShopRite. So it's teaching guys how to be normal when they get home. Some people, if they've been incarcerated for 15 or 20 years, they've never even cooked for themselves, right? It's depending on what age that they came in. It's a random lottery of the guys that are chosen to go over there. It's not the best of the best. A lot of people think that it is. It's not.
That's part of the research. That's part of the research involved, right? You can't just take all the most well-behaved inmates and put them together and say, oh, look, this is going great. You have to make it kind of a randomized sample.
Right, exactly. So that's true. It is a lottery, and it's not the best of the best that's over there. But they find a way to make it work. And, you know, we've had some minor issues there. But I haven't had an assault since it opened on inmate or staff on inmate or, you know, whatever. There hasn't been. And I'm proud of that. And I'm proud of the work that they do over there. And we'll see what happens at the end of the year. But it's going well. It's going well.
You get a lot of attention from the media and legislators and all that. How does that play into the daily operations of the facility?
We're kind of used to it now. Like I said, my staff here are great. The ones that work on the housing unit, the ones that don't, my maintenance, culinary, everybody here just works together. And they understand that we're kind of in the spotlight right now. And we all have to work together to make sure that, you know, we portray who we are. And we do a good job at that, and they're great. They help out. It's sometimes I feel like a tour guide, but that's all right.
All in a day's work. Superintendent Gina Clark, SCI Chester, thanks for hanging out with us for a few minutes today. We appreciate Superintendent Clark and Major Carter for giving us a firsthand look at their facilities. We'll be back again next month. In the meantime, for more info on any of the DOC's facilities, parole supervision, and all things corrections, visit our website at cor.pa.gov. And you can always follow us on social media at CorrectionsPA on Facebook, X, and LinkedIn. On behalf of executive producer Kurt Bope, thank you for listening. I'm your host, Ryan Tarkowski. Until next time.